Fly ball, center field. Back goes Ciani to the warning track. Back at the wall. It's out of here! Mark Vientos wins the game for New York with a two-run homer! Mark Vientos back in the big leagues with a bang! A two-run homer in the bottom of the 11th! And the Mets win it 4-2!
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, April the 28th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever one you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and on the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. It's just been a couple of days since I came to you. Got a great response about the late week or midweek, whatever show you wanted to talk, our old post-West Coast trip check-in. Glad that you guys enjoyed it. Something that maybe we'll do more of when there's a day off during the week and the news is pertinent and the flow is there. This whole thing, as I continue to evaluate the synergy and the, you know, duality or whatever you want to call it between the newsletter and the show and what's the right balance of too much and too little, your feedback is critically important. And, you know, look, whether it's good or bad, and I take the bad feedback well. I don't always agree with it, and it doesn't mean because you don't like something that I'll stop doing it, but definitely I appreciate the feedback. And here we are on this Sunday, another great sports Sunday, a Mets win, a Yankees win, and as you guys know, I love the Knicks, I love the NBA, and I'm not going to lie to you, I spent the first 7 innings of the Met game watching the Knicks game, watching the Knicks with a big win in Philadelphia, career day, an historic day for Jalen Brunson. And but you're not here to hear me talk Knicks. This is not talking Knicks. There's plenty of podcast content about the Knicks, and you don't need to have me dive in on that. You're here to me to talk about the Mets. So it's funny, as I prepare for these weekly shows and I try to give you, you know, the state of the union I like to talk about in this initial portion of the show, and then we usually either have a guest or I dive into different topics. Today we're going to have a guest, and it's a fun one. I'll get to that in a minute, so I'll hold off on that in a minute. But it was funny. You could go a few different ways. You know, we already wrapped up the West Coast trip on Thursday and talked about some of the warning signs that we felt were there. And right away, Friday, Saturday, with Hauser's start on Saturday, with Buto, who continues to show me that even when he doesn't have great stuff or gets off to a bad start, Buto battles. That's what I'll give him that. But it wasn't a great start for Buto on Friday. It wasn't a worst start I've ever seen. It was better than the Dodgers one. He just put them in a hole early. But a lot of what we were talking about, the warning signs of the West Coast trip, were starting to come to fruition. You're like, ah, here we go. Mets, you know, struggling, you know, under 500 now, you know, coming out of the, you know, the road trip and what have you. And really starting to, you know, maybe show some of the warts that, you know, we were all concerned about. And, you know, we could, you know, part of the thing is, you know, are we going to come into today and talk about the starting pitching? You know, because if the Mets had lost today, they'd be under 500. We're going to talk about the starting pitching and how that's going to be a barrier to success. And then, you know, for a good part of the week, and especially as he struck out 4 times on Saturday, the fans, you know, Francisco Lindor has become like this A-Rod, Strawberry, maybe Patrick Ewing type of lightning rod with this town. The one thing about this town, and this is not going to be a rant or, you know, me lecturing you on the fan behavior at the ballpark. I'm not trying to get into that. But what's funny about this town is that we like to focus in on one thing as the reason why a team either gets the way they're going to get or doesn't. We forget about all the other little things. And, you know, For example, it used to be A-Rod used to be the easy polarizing target. You know, back when, you know, before the Yankees won that 09 World Series, it dwindled down a lot after that. And it would be, well, A-Rod this, A-Rod's not clutch. You know, obviously he had a couple of bad postseasons against Detroit, and, you know, he struggled as a, as, you know, his early years with the Yankees, he struggled in the postseason. And nobody took into account that part of the reason the Yankees didn't win those early A-Rod years is that the bullpen wasn't good enough outside of Rivera. The starting pitching wasn't good enough. And, you know, maybe the Yankees were a team that was built a little bit offense heavy, defense light, pitching light, specifically in the starting rotation. And I think when it came to the bullpen, everybody was kind of, oh, well, you got Rivera. But remember, unless your starters are going eight innings, you got that bridge to Rivera, which was equally as important during the late 90s championship run as, you know, Rivera was. But when the Yankees go to hell in a handbag, it's A-Rod. When the Knicks lost, and basketball in the NBA is a little bit different, it's Patrick Ewing's fault. Doesn't matter if somebody missed the defensive assignment. Doesn't matter if John Starks was 3 for 18 in Game 7. It's Ewing's fault. So we always tend to like to put out one person. And I think Lindor is falling into that. Probably because he's out there as the shortstop. You know, you're very visible in that position. His money plays a lot into it, I think. And we talked about this as he was brought over as some sort of top five in baseball player in the likes of Trout or, you know, an A-Rod, to bring back that name, even though he was paid like that. And I think he was marketed that way a little bit. I think the Mets positioned him as like this difference maker. He's a very good player. Look, he's a top 20 player in the league. I mean, WAR indicates that. His WAR is right there with guys like Juan Soto. Obviously, it's distributed a little bit differently, his value to a team. Soto's more on the offensive side in a big way, and Lindor is a little bit more balanced on both sides of the ball. And look, he has been bad all year. He has not been good offensively. He's been streaky. He's been awful, historically awful, as a left-handed batter. I'm not ready to sit here and say he needs to scrap what he's been doing his entire career because of an early season slump. But he certainly has a much longer swing as a lefty batter. And, you know, he seems to sometimes either be out in front. And that indicates to me, like I've said many times, that he's cheating a little bit on the fastball and doesn't have faith that he can get around on the fastball. So when he gets out in front, that's where you see those four threes. He just doesn't look right left-handed. But to say let's scrap it, left-handed, I should say. To say he should scrap it and go to the other side, not ready to say that. It is something that maybe we should examine. And yes, he's been less than great on the defensive side. He hasn't been Lindor. And, you know, to sit here and say he's the reason why the Mets are 14-13, or he's the reason every time the Mets lose 5 out of 6. Look, the reason the Mets have been losing is their starting pitching has not been good. Their starting pitching wasn't good in San Francisco. It really wasn't great in L.A., but they were able to, you know, mitigate that by getting ahead. They didn't do a lot of the little things like hit with runners in scoring position and two outs. You saw before the Vientos home run in extra innings today, and he's going to be the big conversation topic here. They were struggling to get the big hit. You know, the Mets are a team. Go back to the blueprint. It's not just about getting that solid 6 innings. And you got way more than that in Quintana today. It's also about doing a lot of little stuff on both sides of the ball. On the defensive side, the timely hitting, that's a team, a conglomerate team thing. So to have this whole make this about Lindor, not going to do that. To make it just about the starting pitching, you guys know my concerns about the starting pitching. And as we get towards the end of this first month, I think how much longer will you see Adrian Hauser get some rope and Buto get some rope? And look, you got McGill on the way back. You got Singh on the way back. You got Peterson on the way back. Dom Hamill's pitching well down in the minors. Christian Scott's pitching well down in the minors. Blade Tidwell's pitching well down in the minors. The Mets, at the very least, are not going to have to go very far to get more pitching. And I think what you saw with Tejeron earlier in the year, the only reason he even got a start is because you couldn't bring up Buto before the 12th of April. I mean, here's baseball. He's got a pitching problem. Guys are getting hurt. Look, Nate Lavender, prospect of the Mets, Tommy John surgery. Guys are getting hurt left and right. I mean, you want to see, you want to know a non-anecdotal, like, reason why pitching is screwed up? Just look at my fantasy baseball injured list, all the pitching I've already dumped on the injured list this year, and some of them I drafted. So it's like I knew they were injured, you know, early in the year. It's amazing. And Major League Baseball makes it hard for you to shuttle before April 12th players that you sent down at the end of spring. Got to examine that. And the bottom line is, with the way that they're shuttling relievers now, because the starters aren't going deep, Josh Walker had a couple of good outings here this week, and he's sent down. Danny Young brought up. You know, a lot of these scrap heap guys are going to, you know, whether it be Johan Ramirez, now Danny Young, they're going to start to get their one or two or 10 innings, whatever how long, depending how good they are, because of the constant shuttling. I keep saying, best solution is expand the roster to 28, allow teams to have 15 pitchers. And I know it's going to cost you, at the very least, I think I figured it out, it's going to cost the league another $45 million across 30 teams just to have two league minimum guys. Some might be more if you bring veterans in. But if you're going to have any semblance of continuity for these players and not have them shuttle from AAA down, which it's cheaper, they don't have to pay those guys a big league salary. I mean, you have to expand the roster. But you're not going to get into that. You know, it's not about Lindor today. It's not about the pitching and the starting pitching. We've talked about that. You know, you guys know the blueprint by now of how the 2024 Mets have to get things done. You know, we've talked about it. It's a lot of little things. And you saw that today. You know, even though they didn't play great and they didn't have the big hit through the first, you know, what, 10 innings, they got a couple of big hits in the 11th inning. They got Harrison Bader. They got a big two-out hit by Harrison Bader, who has been really good on the offensive side. And then they got the big two-run home run from Mark Vientos. And that's where we're going to go here with Mark Vientos, because it's funny. The newsletter Beyond the Mic has been a little bit ahead of the curve about where the next big news story is going. And that's been pretty cool to see. First off, I went to the game and I went to Citi Field and I brought up Reed Garrett and talked a little bit about this like emerging secret weapon in the Mets bullpen. And sure enough, Reed Garrett, like that week after I wrote that piece over Beyond the Mic, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG, he's out there getting big outs against the Dodgers. And again today, you know, which really brought my first thing, and I'll bring it up on the way out here, about why you always automatically go to the closer in the ninth inning when you might want to save the closer for the 10th inning when there's runners on base. I'll get to that on the way out here. I want to keep this on Vientos. But Reed Garrett goes out and makes a big name for himself. He got his fifth win. So ever since I wrote the Reed Garrett piece over Beyond the Mic on the Substack newsletter, Reed Garrett is like front and center here in the Mets bullpen. So now everybody knows about him. But we knew about him first. We started to like what we saw early here at the Talking Mets podcast. Now I write this week, early in the week, the Mark Vientos factor. And the point of my Mark Vientos piece was to say, hey, you got this guy down in the minor leagues that has been one of the most underappreciated prospects I've ever seen come through the Mets system. I mean, that's the truth. I mean, he's been somebody that even when he's been on like top 10 lists and, you know, has creeped into the, you know, maybe the top five or whatever it may be, depending on what list you really have, he's never really been someone that at any point in time you get the idea that he is going to be a solution for the Mets. He was always that guy, all the way back to rookie ball. You knew he had pop. You know, he was 17 years old, drafted out of high school. So he's been with the organization. It's almost like he seemed like a trillion years. It's like when Wilmer Flores was drafted as a 16-year-old. And by the time he, you know, had made his way through the Mets organization, it seemed like he was there a billion years. Same thing with Steven Matz. When these guys come out of high school, especially now with the way we follow them on social media, it seems like they were the organization for a ton of time. But, you know, here's a guy since 2021 has been hitting, you know, 25 home runs, driving in runs in the minor leagues, you know, slugging, you know, in the high 500s, you know, 550, 580, what have you. You know, this year has an OPS over 900 down in the minors. Hitting over 300. You know, one of the things that has, you know, been impressive, and it's an outcome stat, but it talks about the process, is that Vientos has the highest walk percentage and the lowest K percentage since his rookie year. So, you know, he's clearly figuring out AAA. Let's put it that way. He's figuring out. He's a guy that, you know, we've seen him as a cup of coffee, strikes out a lot, has good opposite field power, doesn't really provide you much on the defensive side. I mean, he's not Daniel Vogelback, but he's somebody who has to provide you really much on the defensive side. And he's basically a DH. Best case scenario, maybe he could give you some time at first base. You got Pete there. And, you know, you're not sure if he's 4A or not. So this is a big year for Vientos. He clearly was frustrated, had a decent spring, but was frustrated about getting sent down. You know, this is the ultimate. We talk about the Darren Reed Award. I mean, this is the ultimate Darren Reed Award. I mean, this is the ultimate guy that symbolizes what, when we talked about that story and we had that vault, you know, looking back at Darren Reed, a guy that's tearing up the minor leagues, good minor league numbers, in the wrong organization, not getting the shot. Now, all of a sudden, Starling Marte has an issue, you know, on the bereavement list for a couple of days. He gets called up. And at first, when I saw the news, I'm like, well, you know, Beatty's not hitting. So maybe this is a way to keep him honest and maybe see what you got here. But what's interesting is I didn't expect the Mets to really bring Vientos up at any point in time unless Beatty really stunk the joint up. And even then, you know, they really see Vientos as a third baseman, because now you have J.D. Martinez as the DH. If you weren't going to allow him, you allow D.J. Stewart to be that DH for the first month while Martinez was rounding, you know, getting himself into game shape. You know, that's an opportunity that was lost on Vientos. You hope that Pete doesn't get bopped on the hand and need time off on the injured list like he did last year. That's always a concern. So as long as Pete's on the roster and healthy, he's going to play first base every day. All right? And Beatty's playing well on the defensive side, not so much on the offensive side, but the feeling you've gotten since the start of spring is that they really want to give this season to Beatty, hook or by crook, to prove that he belongs as the starting third baseman. And, you know, so you're saying to yourself, why would they bring up Vientos? And then part of me, and I wrote about this earlier in the week, and I don't want to, you know, I like to always be respectful to paid subscribers, but I'll give you a little piece there. You know, you started to think about how Vientos can really help the Mets in 2024. And when I wrote the piece early in the week, I was like, the only way I could see him being helpful is continuing to mash the ball at AAA, continue to show good process improvements with walk rate and potentially not being this high swing and miss guy who can't get on base in any other way. And potentially, if the Mets are in contention, and I expect them to be at least in the muck come the trade deadline at the end of July, maybe he can be a piece that you could put into a trade to get somebody over here. Now, you know, if you're talking about a guy who could be a starter on another team and hit 30 home runs or 25 home runs, you know, I don't think you just want to trade him for some, you know, random middle reliever. But, you know, maybe if the Mets want to get another starter, could he be in a situation where the Mets are buying some salary? Could he be a piece that is a prospect you feel comfortable giving up at this point in time? You know, I threw a wild scenario. We're nowhere near it, and it's ironic. Last year, the Mets sold Justin Verlander off to Houston because they were in the race and the Mets weren't. Could the Mets, who are already paying some Verlander salary this year and maybe next year, depending on whether he vests, could they buy him back? They're already paying him and say, all right, I'll take the rest of the salary on that you are on the hook for. But, you know, Houston's going to want something. They have Bregman as a free agent. Would they take Vientos as possibly somebody, you know, to trade? You know, it's something to think about, something that I put out there at Beyond the Mic. But then, you know, that was earlier in the week. That was my thing. You know, his value is staying down the minors. Don't let him get exposed to the big leagues. Don't let him give anybody any doubt that he's a 4A guy. And that's hard to do in today's day and age, especially when you got all sorts of scouts, all sorts of metrics, all sorts of video. You really can't hide. You can't stash someone and sell them. There's a certain salesmanship when it comes to trading, as everybody could imagine. But, you know, today's day and age, you can't sell, you know, chicken blank into chickens if, you know, with all the data that's around there. You know, if it's chicken blank, it's chicken blank. Usually the other team knows. But, you know, Vientos has shown some interesting trends. Now, what got me thinking today and over the weekend, I saw him get a base hit off a tough closer on Saturday afternoon, you know, in that ninth inning. You know, Libertor was tired, but he's still a tough pitcher. And there he is. He takes a ball the opposite way. And that's one of the things about Vientos. His opposite field power is tremendous. You know, it was slightly the opposite way. He's dead center. But, you know, a little bit towards the right center. You know, I'm just trying to imagine the home run here. And he hits the big two-run walk-off homer. And I'm thinking to myself, well, at some point, how do the Mets, if this guy isn't 4A, and this is a guy that can hit 240, 250 with 20 to 25 home run power, you know, maybe improve his approach where he walks a little bit more. You know, can he be a piece to this team, not only now, but down the road? And then I start to really look at Brett Beatty. I'm not here to trash Beatty. Trust me. I mean, that was right away what everybody said. But, man, if Vientos could play any kind of passable defense at third, and the way he hits, the way he hits the ball hard, the kind of power he has, things that Beatty, if you go to Baseball Savant, if you look at the process that Beatty's put together, you know, with all the ground balls, the lack of hard contact. The real exciting part about Beatty 2024 is that he's made so much strides on defense. I mean, he's actually a good defensive third baseman. I don't know what the advanced metrics are saying. I'm not going to get into that right now. But the eye test is I feel confident that even late in the ballgame that Beatty can make some nice plays. He can make the routine plays. He can make tough plays. He could potentially turn tough double plays. He's not perfect. But he's definitely moving in the right direction. But he can't hit. I mean, he looks like Joey Wendell with those advanced metrics the way he's hitting. And that, you know, you already got Joey Wendell for $2 million bucks that you could put him at third, although he hasn't even shown the same defensive chops that Beatty has. Now, if Vientos could balance it out, and I don't expect him to be Beatty, but if he's passable where, you know, maybe you could even play him the first seven innings of a ball game, and if it's close, maybe you bring Beatty in for defense or Wendell in for defense, depending on where you want to go. You know, do you give him a shot? You know, Mendoza had said after the ball game that Vientos, who's only going to be here until Marte's bereavement is up, we get another shot. You know, where's that going to be? J.D. Martinez sat today. We expected him to sit one to two times a week because of his back issue, because he's, especially now, because he's ramping himself back up into game shape. He's starting to get there. You know, obviously you don't want to push him too fast, too soon, especially with a back situation. You know, would Vientos, and I don't know if this is, at this point in his development, if this is worth, you know, him going down just to get reps every day, can you work and can Mendoza work in some kind of repetition? Would it be better when Marte comes back to dump Wendell? Because other than being a backup shortstop for Lindor, and Lindor never really comes out, and I'm thinking an emergency, if God forbid Lindor got hurt, I think McNeil could play short. I would have to think he could play shortstop here. And that's a great question. I would say if anybody in the media asked, that would be a great question. Hey, is there a chance that, you know, Lindor could play short in an emergency? Because Wendell can, and, you know, I don't think Beatty can, and the Mets don't have, you know, if they keep Vientos to get rid of Wendell, they really don't have a backup shortstop. Not the end of the world if you have that emergency situation. Obviously, you know, if McNeil's out of the game for a reason, then you have yourself a problem. But, you know, could you keep Vientos around to spell J.D. Martinez one or two times a week, spell Beatty against a tough lefty, and shoot, maybe spell Beatty against a tough righty because he's a better hitter, potentially. I mean, ultimately, you'd love for somehow Mendoza and David Stearns to go in the lab and kind of combine Vientos' power and offense with Beatty's defense, but you can't do that. That's not realistic. But I think the difference between when anybody who was a subscriber of Beyond the Mic, when I talked about Mark Vientos earlier in the week and today, is that if he's in it, you saw a better approach, and I understand it's only a couple of games. What I saw was a guy with a better approach that was able to get a base hit off a tough closer, didn't overswing on that base hit, was able to work the count against the tough closer, some tough secondary pitches, tough slider. And then I saw him take another, you know, albeit a lefty, but take a tough pitcher, take him the other way, dead center, slightly the other way for a game-winning home run. Those are impressive at-bats. You know, late in ball games against tough pitching. It's not like he's coming in and haymakering some 4A schlep that he'd be hitting down in the minor leagues. It's just not. So I think what we have to start to wonder is, does Mark Vientos have a role in the big league club in helping the Mets win in 2024? And can that still happen? And while you do that, can you preserve his value? Because one of the reasons why you want to mash in a AAA is that if here's an opportunity to, and if he isn't anywhere near anything more than a 4A player, you'd love to be able to get him when there's still that wonder about who he is. Remember Dilson Herrera, the second baseman they got from the Pirates? I think it was in the Ike Davis trade, and how he was supposed to be the next best thing. And, you know, the Mets wound up trading him. I think he was traded in the Jay Bruce deal. So they got some good value out of him, but he was exposed once he went to Cincinnati. But there was always that feeling, because he put up good numbers in the minor leagues because he was a top prospect in Pittsburgh, that he was more than what he really was. Until he gets some playing time in the big leagues, then you realize, well, he's not as good as everybody thinks, right? And, you know, you wonder if there's this component of that with Vientos. Although Vientos is starting to show you that he's not 4A. And I know it's a small sample size and it's only a couple at-bats, you know, and all of a sudden you play Vientos for a week, day in and day out against top pitching, you know, against, you know, all these different type of hurlers that are going to come at him. You know, the Cubs have some good starters, and then obviously the Mets are going to Tampa, and that's always a tough matchup. But, and then he starts to fall back into the same rut that you saw his first 2 years when he got a cup of coffee, where he strikes out a ton, you know, pops an occasional home run, but doesn't really hit consistently. That's a different situation, you know. But look, the guy's been through hell and back. He's a guy that clearly wants to be in the big leagues. He's proven everything that he can in AAA. And, you know, you saw that primal scream that he let out after the home run. This is a guy that wants it. And to me, this kind of weekend, this kind of at-bat, this kind of performance, you got to ride that and see if maybe something clicks. I'm not saying he should displant Beatty. I'm not saying Beatty's done. I'm still very concerned about Beatty. As much as his defense has improved, his bat is anemic. And his bat doesn't show a process with lift, with launch angle, with hitting the ball hard, where, you know, you get the, you have the confidence that the 20 home run guy, the guy with power that, you know, was advertised as a top Mets prospect in the minor leagues, will ever emerge in a big league uniform. Here with Vientos, in some ways, he wasn't the darling of the organization like a Beatty. And he hasn't been given the benefit of the doubt like a Beatty, like most first-round picks always do in organizations that get a lot of rope to hang themselves, for lack of a better word. And Vientos going through that journey as a minor leaguer, going through that disappointment and frustration and always seeming to be the 27th guy on a 26-man roster. Well, guess what? That experience can maybe be channeled into taking the talent that he has as a ball player and evolving to something that maybe he didn't even realize he could evolve into. And if he could play some passable defense, well, you know, that might be something to hang on to. Here's the other thing to remember. You don't know if Pete Alonso is going to be here next year. Now, I'm not saying he should be the starting first baseman and let Pete walk. That's not what I'm saying. But you might want to have a plan for who's going to be Pete Alonso's replacement. And it could be Mark Vientos if he walks. You know, it's long gone are the days when Dom Smith was the next heir apparent. And the Mets are not loaded right now, other than, you know, your, you know, you have Jet Williams, you have Acuna, you have Gilbert. But the Mets right now still have some work to do on the development on the offensive side. It's the pitching that we've been talking about. You've seen a better crop of relievers coming up, finally. Denyel Nunez, another great arm to look for. You know, Josh Walker. You know, the Mets are able to shuttle and get some quality out of the shuttle. But could Mark Vientos be, you know, a guy that we continue to overlook, and the solution, maybe the third base, and maybe even a couple of times a week, you know, keep J.D. Martinez fresh. I shared this story. Remember Dave Magadan? He was stuck behind Keith Hernandez for 3 years before he got a shot. And even then, they brought Mike Marshall in because they wanted somebody with power. They always beat up on Magadan because he had no power. Little, you know, if that was the Bill, you know, if someone listed the Bill James, Magadan was an elite on base guy. And you know, Magadan did okay for himself playing sporadically. I'm sure he was frustrated, but he did it at the big league level, and his development wasn't hurt. I mean, I'm sure he would have loved to have been playing every day for another big league team. But what was he going to prove in Tidewater at the time? What is Vientos going to prove down in Syracuse? Nothing. So maybe it's an opportunity. And look, if he gets exposed, you lose some trade value out of him? Yes. But I think the Mets have a good feel of whether or not that's the case, because I trust their talent evaluation. And look, I think Beatty is a part of the lineup, especially where Alvarez is out, where you're putting more pressure on a Bader and the catching slot to hit because you're not getting anything out of Beatty. Remember, in 2022, when that offense had brownouts, it coincided a lot with Escobar having that down summer until he started hitting in September. The lineup is Lindor, Pete, McNeil, Nimmo, the core guys. I'll put J.D. Martinez in there. Those guys will slump at the same time, or majority of them are slumping. They're not going to score runs. It's going to be very hard for them to score runs. So you bring in Vientos, potentially there is maybe something to come from that. Before I go to a break and bring Howie Carpen on, you know, here was something I was thinking today. So I see Diaz, you know, and Diaz is, you know, as we talked about, he's starting to show a little bit more velocity, but he's working mainly off his slider. Looked pretty good today. You know, Burleson hit a decent ball against him. He's still not vintage Diaz. He's still not hitting triple digits. We still don't have an answer, you know, even though the Mets say they're not concerned if there's something going on there. But I was wondering, and maybe today is the bad day to bring this up. I've always said, why do you put your closer in the ninth inning instead of wait, hold him back for the 10th inning with the ghost runner, especially when you have a deep bullpen like the Mets, and take your next best reliever, if he's available, and make him work a clean inning? Because I see it a lot. Now, I know what you're saying, you know, the Cardinals had the middle of the order. So maybe today it made sense for Diaz. And Reed Garrett is actually doing the best impression of Diaz not being Diaz 2024, Diaz 2022. So maybe you didn't have to worry about that as much with Reed Garrett now. Maybe Reed Garrett's this find that's turning into something. So I'll put that aside for a minute. But I always wonder why, because, you know, if I'm managing and if that was the bottom of the lineup that Mendoza was facing, the Cardinals lineup, I would have went with Reed Garrett, even though maybe, you know, there's other components of Garrett, multiple inning guy. Maybe that's part of what he's thinking there. But I'd go with Garrett and save Diaz for where the ghost runner is, because more than likely you're going to get swing and miss and inability to have contact. So I've always wondered that. I wonder if it's a strategy that'll be talked more about, be deployed. I know if somebody did it and they lost in the ninth inning, they'd be widely criticized. But I think you have to look at the lineup and play your hunches. And I wonder if it's something that Mendoza will do. Hold Diaz back in the ninth inning. Put another reliever, depending on what part of the order is, and make him be the guy, especially on the road. You know, where, you know, that bottom of the inning, once they score, they score. You know, and away you go. I know on the road you still have to get three outs. Maybe it's a little bit different. Maybe you could play this at home a little bit. I'm kind of walking through this thought process with you guys here. So just some thoughts on the way out here before we get to Howie Carpen and 9761313. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Howie Carpen, official scorer for the Mets-Yankees, been doing it for nearly three decades. Howie's a great guy. He's been on the show before. You know, when there's a controversial call about a hit or an error, it's more than likely Howie Carpen was the guy at the ballpark that was making that call. He's been doing it for a long time. But he was also part of an amazing company that was really at the forefront of talk radio and all the things that we do today that we take for granted. It's 9761313. It's Sports Phone. And I was a customer of Sports Phone as a, you know, 12-year-old, 13-year-old Mike Silva, who didn't have a lot of cable. You know, the Fan was just coming into its own, and yeah, you had the update. But if you wanted to get, hey, the Mets are playing the Cardinals in a big game, and the Cards are in Philadelphia, and the Mets are ahead, and you want to know what's going on in St. Louis, well, you could wait for the score on Channel 9 while you're watching the Mets broadcast. You have no MLB.com app, so what you do is you go to 9761313, right? And they get you the score. And you're just praying that you didn't call it too much where your parents would get on your case for the phone bill. My parents never complained about the phone bill, so I have no idea how much 9761313 cost them. They never said anything. West Coast, you know, August, the Mets would always go out to L.A., San Francisco, San Diego. The dog days of August, big games, you know, against the Padres late, a 10-10 start, you know, even before games were 3.5 hours. You know, I'm a young guy. I'm 12, 13. I'm not staying up for the whole game. I didn't have a television in my room. I didn't have an iPhone or anything like that. So I had a Walkman, and one of two things would happen. Either I would wait to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and usually be Steve Summers or Jody McDonald, who were doing an overnight show, and wait for the scores to come up to see if the Mets had won. Or I would call 9761313 in the morning and get the scores then from the West Coast trip. So on and on and on. And I'll share with Howie a funny, it's more Knicks related, a funny 9761313 story that I had in college, actually. At the end of that run in 1997, when, you know, you had the internet, but if you were mobile and you were out and about, not in front of a computer, you still needed 9761313 and what have you. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Howie Carpen, co-author of the book 9761313, will be joining me, official scorekeeper for the Mets and Yankees, great baseball guy. So let's get to that and more right after this.